Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, March 29th, 2016. This is hour 305 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And I want to thank James from North Wales for paying to keep all these hours on the web. So thank you very much, James. We all appreciate you. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello, welcome back from being out in the ocean.
Yeah, thank you. Been out there cruising around, exactly what it was a cruise. And hit the Caribbean, but hit the east coast of the Caribbean side. Mm-hmm. Didn't go down in Central Caribbean or the middle part. Did pass Cuba. Did get to see the coastline of Cuba.
Oh, close enough?
Close enough. I actually saw the inlet to, I don't know which harbor it was, but it was pretty interesting. You know, I actually got that close.
You must have been like 5 miles away.
Probably. It seemed about there. Uh-huh. So, at the initial pass, going south, past it, then turned to south. That was a little further out, so it was just a hazy image. But coming past it, going back the other way, back up to Florida again, it was much closer in. Anyway, that's just, you know, Cuba may be seeing itself opening up because of Obama's recent visit. Things may change somewhat in the relationship in terms of how we act towards Cuba and Cubans act toward us. But that's political climates, governments, and changes that go on. It's continually changing, you know, the climate of our society, global climate also changing.
I saw a picture of his Air Force One on final with you know, still in the air, but on the ground, mm-hmm. You could see some old cars from the 50s.
Oh, yeah, they're all over. If people want to collect old cars, that's where they're all at. They kept them running from 1940, 50s. That's about it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you said, before we started, you said you... Well, you didn't go into the ocean, which I was a bit surprised. I thought you'd probably take a, you know, swim in that part of the world also. But you were you went and saw a pyramid?
Yeah, Chichen Itza. Chichen Itza.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Chichen Itza is interesting. I wasn't fully aware that there's some interesting photographs on the web concerning Chichen Itza showing a beam of light coming up from the top of it. You know, somebody took a picture with their cell phone and they got this strange beam of light image. Anyway, I decided to take a picture with my phone and I didn't receive any beam of light coming out of it. But what I did have over there was education. In terms of what happened there and what this place was all about. The civilization had gone to a point where they had mock warfare. Adjacent to Chichen Itza is a playing field. People can kind of know about it because that's where they had these ball games and supposedly were, you know, hitting a rubber ball through a tiny little hoop. That hoop was really small on the side of the arena. Walked around in the arena and there's carvings all over the place and they're showing, you know, the vanquished champion of the opposite team that lost, and it showed him without a head after a while, and the other guy's holding his head up or having his head.
Oh,
and I was wondering.
Yeah, go ahead. I've got to knock at the door. I'll be right back.
Yeah, go ahead. And I was wondering what that was, and I received an image, an impression, actually, answering me quite directly, and it was called a mock warfare. So Chichen Itza apparently held a type of civilizations in their leading toward mock warfare rather than full warfare, which inevitably is highly destructive and would have and could have in past times destroyed their own culture. So they had mock warfare, and one person lost his life and gave it up willingly in order to preserve the destiny of them. But eventually what had happened over there was climate change probably occurred, and they no longer could support themselves. But during the height of the Mayan and this culture, the pyramid was constructed. It had an interesting characteristic on the steps. You face the steps on one side and clap your hands, and you hear a reflected or echo, which is not the same sound. It comes back chirpy sounding. And that's interesting. That's because of the way it was constructed. I don't know if it was done purposefully to sound that way. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's a little bit of what I discovered there. But there's also a whole bunch of skulls all painted on it. Skulls, of course, are reminders of our mortal lives. And that is, of course, something that happens to be true for everybody who is a human being born of a woman and growing up. There are, of course, other beings who have been fully formed and appear on Earth, but they're not, you know, of Earth. And many may be arriving soon. I believe I've met one individual who I consider not necessarily having been born here. He wanted to verify my existence. Apparently I'm recorded with Danos, and I was told that I was to meet a very special person, and I was going to be interviewed by him. So anyway, in the interview he began to speak as if he knew a lot about the Urantia book, but he never mentioned it. And he talked about fusion between the Adjuster and our consciousness in the Eternal Soul, actually creating a fusion between soul and Adjuster, the divine, finality of ascent, becoming a truly full-fledged spiritual being, even with full luminosity, in other words, glowing with your own light. So anyway, that's one of the things that I had experienced in terms of, you know, other than normal human beings, but that wall was full of skulls, just a reminder of all the people that had this mock warfare, perhaps. Today's sport is considered a type of mock warfare, sometimes taken very seriously, you know, and can cause riots if things don't go out just right. Yeah.
You were interviewed, you said?
Yeah, that was many years ago. I was, just walking down the street, and a person walked up to me and said, "There is someone here to meet you. I don't know you, but you know of you, and they want to speak with you." So I walked in and said, "To meet you at this restaurant," and I did, sat down with them. And that was it. Just hello, and you know this and that. A little bit test checking here and there, and we verified. By the way, I answered certain questions that I had some experience with the Celestials. It wasn't proper the proper time. In other words, it's not fully the time in which the teacher sons will become enabled to begin to integrate more fully into society. But that is apparently been ongoing for a while. The Urantia groups are probably one of the groups that are having a greater interface, many times not knowing, especially the bigger gatherings where there's a lot of people and people may not really know another person, and they just simply wander around. They are observers more than implementing anything new, because what they're looking for is not to teach, they're to see, you might call it observe, and to have a assessment of how well it's being, you might call it, implemented or just simply absorbed into this consciousness of at least a group of people aware of information. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we could, a few days ago, Wendy wrote, 26 March, subject was, "Your planet is on a sunrise to a new and more wonderful age." And this was back in hour 196. "Dear gents, I wish to address this to the Shaharon and refer to a discussion of August 2013. Ted Shaharon, 13 August 2013. The age has changed and the primary suns have been introduced. The primary suns come forward before the higher order teachers. Each higher order teacher has many of the primary sons who have been educated by and has spent time with them, as Michael of Maui spent time with us. In so doing, they introduce a more perfect age of greater development and harnessing the full wisdom and bringing forth a newer and more wonderful creation of your own, with great embellishment by the introduction of true concepts from the teacher sons. The struggle remains, yet these past difficulties are remembered. Some of the words are said, we learn, we remember, that these things should never happen again. Urantia seems to follow a repetitive pattern as a result of the Luciferian rebellion and the Adamic default, which are not correcting the wrongs of past errors and control systems. I accept the need for a magisterial sun and the correcting mansion as a way to set Urantia on the path of light and life. Urantia Book, Paper 20, and open-heartedly welcome such a mission. What I'm most confused about is why Nancy Leader and the Zeta Talk Forum focus mainly on how the planetary errors and control systems are to be corrected, with severe physical changes due to tectonic and volcanic disturbances, and why the Urantia Book is not permitted for discussion in the and why the Urantia book is not, I did read that right, why the Urantia book is not permitted for discussion in the Zeta Talk forum. My confusion stems, and this is the last part of her piece here, my confusion stems from the fact that Michael and Nancy were both educated on the New Jerusalem, but I fail to see the harmony in their messages. I may very well have revealed immaturity in my own character in the lack of understanding, but I welcome loving correction. With loving greetings from New Zealand, signed Wendy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty much talking about the introduction of the higher teachers, the Danos, and also the fact that there are, you might call them, primary sons. Those, many of them being of the order of the mortal core of destiny. These are human beings, specially trained, you might call them. The Urantia book called them pre-rehearsed for special missions. There'd be interesting on how individuals are pre-rehearsed at different levels of function in different areas of function, bring about for different purposes, are brought on them or pressed upon them, these mortal core, for different functions. We have within my grasp of memory, within them, I have Riley Martin. Riley Martin is an intelligent individual, but having a very coarse personality. And it wasn't considered any problem with our celestial friends because they prefer to be coarse rather than be deceptive. It was one of the biggest problems that had happened under the Luciferian deception and rebellion. Lucifer was highly skilled in deception and never spoke anything really truthfully. And it's because of that that many times in conversing with people like Tenjin Wan or Onea Sea Wan, they would comment, why do you go through all of that just to say this? This is a concept of a political correctness, you might call it, or, you know, just manners, yeah, you might call it another way. These things are overlaid over our consciousness for, you might call it, interaction between our humankind, because we are, our composition as human beings are delicate on some areas. And the penalties many times of improperly speaking to another person can be quite devastating, especially if they hold power. This is true for anyone speaking to anyone of high rank and authority of simple life and death. So people ended up having to have a vernacular of and way of speaking. In Riley's case, he was pretty straightforward, never needing anything else except just plain old talk, and sometimes it was rather coarse. with Nancy, her title became the, and is, still remains, the communicator, was implemented at a particular level of education or interface. She only made it up to the point in which we went into a room and we were taken there for some kind of adjustment deep inside of our brain. I believe this is down at the in the pineal gland. And it was a disturbance you might say, an entanglement, which makes communication much easier. But we still, all human beings, are made to have a affinity or a bit of receptivity to the divine voices, the spiritual voices, you might call them. It doesn't necessarily find its clarity as far as talking to a particular personality, take a particular person. With Nancy, it's with Zeta talk and with her interface with the Zeta types, which were the ones who did the implants or the entanglement. And she was in shock. They put her in a type of a catatonic state. I wasn't ever put into a catatonic state. If I was immobilized, it was in the very beginning, before I interfaced fully with their consciousness. I ascended past certain levels of question and answer, finally going to the very highest level, and I was given the view within the New Jerusalem that I was at the top. Apparently you spiral up through the New Jerusalem, is the inner part of the sphere, and if you, depending upon where you are, that has to do with perhaps your spiritual acuity, your receptivity toward spiritual truth, which is our ultimate destiny. Our destiny is not to remain physical. But along the way, the physical path is very important. There are certain areas in the lower levels where interface was made for myself and some lady, some spotted lady and another ladies. And there was an offer for sexual relations, but that wasn't taken by me. I wanted to know more. This stuff wasn't what I was looking for. The answer wasn't that there. Riley Martin participated in it. And yeah, in fact, said that he was shown his offspring. So he did have probably an offspring from one of those special human types. From what I looked at, she had a kind of brownish tan appearance that had a lot of purple spots all over, like tattoos. Mm-hmm. It's in fact the same color as tattoos, but all over her face. So anyway, that ultimately was probably a different type of human. Moving on past that, I'm going to send it up. You ascend to a point of it where you begin to ask questions. Some of it sits in front of a screen. Nancy Leader probably sat in front of that screen, saw the devastation that the dinosaurs, various extinction cycles, and that remained a burned-in image to her. So that is probably where she left off. I looked at that and said, okay, fine. I understand it, and I wanted to know even more, because that doesn't explain the purpose of life. Because if you have life and all it is to wipe it out and start all over again, it just doesn't make sense. There's got to be a higher purpose, and I kept looking for the answers to that. And of course, they continued to answer it. The numerous questions that I had until that highest question, and I kept ascending up toward that question, ultimately never finding the lower answers enough. And the lower answers, of course, had to do with physical life, had to do with other beings of other worlds and culture, and the progress of life. But what is the purpose of all of this? Why? And the why continued to bother me. Finally, I'm taking up to the point where the Dano had seen that I was ready. He declared me perfect. The perfection that I had obtained was a level of perfection, not necessarily absolute perfection. in terms of absolute perfection would have to do with the first source and center, but a type of perfection necessary to attain and absorb truth. I was also implanted with a sudden revelation knowledge of the Yirancha book, not just in the Yirancha book itself, but the information contained with it, so that it would explode into complete understanding as I'm exposed to the Yirancha book and its teachings, as well as biblical ones and stories, which I was aware of and continue to, you know, gain greater knowledge about. Our position right now remains as humans that are moving toward higher destiny in a planet filled ever more crowded with human beings to populate a universe that is continually growing with galaxies that are completely void of life. I mean, the majority of all the universe that we can see and look into is void. It's material, but it's void of sentient life, or just the beginning primal life. So you can see the destiny of human beings as being quite spectacular, because we are finite beings, not an infinite being, but a finite being having an actual origin time, but not necessarily having an end destiny. So this is the important thing. And the Vorondadek, Most High Observer, stationed here in our solar system at the probably in one of his areas, which may be located close to Earth, or maybe in the New Jerusalem, orbiting Saturn, maybe in numerous locations, because I don't think he's physically locked into a location, or is a destiny to become as he, as I am, the ultimate I am. In other words, to attain divinity and the nature of true luminosity of spirit. This luminous sees the physical area that we have. We don't glow as physical beings unless we have been, you might say, actuated by and impinged upon with the spiritual luminosity that can be experienced at a level. And this is where the concept of the halos come about and stuff. So there is spiritual luminosity as one individual gains higher destiny step by step. Our position right now is to continue to gain ever more experience and to widen it out, to have an enriched life. As you look at that, there may be no between myself and Nancy, myself and Riley Martin, may not be, you know, harmonious. But it is, in a sense, having a very similar or near similar original or lower level acuity. In other words, you can parallel many of the experiences that Riley talks about, that Nancy Leader talks about, and I talk about in the earlier stages. But as one drops off toward and another drops off, Riley dropped off, Nancy dropped off, and then I ascended to the final height and received the gift of the knowledge that the Yirancha book is truly not a made-up book. It is something that they had, and it is something gifted to our planet. But it is not all that there is. It answers a whole lot, but not everything. Much of the answers that we must gain from it is being able to understand that our location in terms of our maturity and attainment varies between individual to individual. So we don't need to come to prejudgments on, well, too bad. They, in walking around the New Jerusalem, there are people at various levels of development. Some had physical or finite development. In other words, most of them were finite development. They started someplace at mortal origin or created in terms of some kind of, I don't know, cloning operation or something, non-sexual. But anyway, these are the things that I experienced. So, to answer Wendy's question about having the differential between myself, Nancy, Riley, and others, it's because of it's being ready. So many people are not ready. Some people just want the fact that there are, you know, physical, living, breathing, material, organic, alien beings. That's all they want to be concerned about. And I can say that is absolutely true. You'll find them, and they may, in my interface with them, there are many different type of humanoid beings, but it was not necessarily limited only to the humanoid form. There were others. And then moving up higher to become even of a higher nature, Marantia or fully spirit. The Marantia beings can be seen if they wanted to. So the full spirit beings, such as the Varandadex, who I met, are really beings of luminosity, of light. Yeah, so.
Well, Nancy's discussion in Zeta Talk just goes into so many different areas. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal, many of the things she brings up and talks about, but the Urantia book doesn't seem to be there.
Yeah, but there was an interview with Nancy Leader, myself, and Z-Man on his program called Project Urantia. Mm-hmm. So there is an interview between us, Nancy and I, which she confirmed that she wasn't against the Urantia book, because but she didn't experience the Urantia book to a point where she wanted to use it as a reference table to be on.
I see.
Aligned to, you know. But many of the things can be aligned to the Urantia book in her discussion. So other than that, she wants to bring down things more to where we live right now. My concern is not so much where we live. It never was. My concern is, so what? We live 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 years. My grandmother lived to 102. My mother till 92. You know, my grandparents all 90s plus. Well, but they're all gone. They're all dead. So what was their purpose to live all that life? For what? What contribution? To make a contribution? What is it all about? And this is the answer I was seeking. And then I found out, you mean to tell me people can waste an entire lifetime and not develop their eternal soul? Because they're too concerned about the physical needs and necessities of life basic on Earth? When most of that will be dissolved in a sense because we will not inherit a physical body of the same type, but a body rather that will transcend the limitations of the physical. In other words, there is a purpose that the scaffolding of the human life, the human body, and our lifetimes are supposed to build. And we're supposed to be building a fully experiential life filled with richness and goodness between ourselves and our gift. The divine fragment, the thought adjuster, divine fractal, to build an eternal soul. Mm-hmm. And that eternal soul be enriched. Jesus Christ came and he said, I have come to give you life, and life more abundant, more abundantly. Why? Because if one is only concerned about maintaining physical life, having enough food and enough shelter and clothing or whatever to survive, then you're building all the things necessary to maintain the physical shell, the scaffolding, and not concerned with the building of the inner man, the true soul that is eternal, our only morontial possession that actually bridges between our physical realm, our mind, and our spiritual, between the divinity fragment, ourselves. That is so important. And in our living, we gain unique personality, which is unlimited in differentiation. In other words, every single person in the entire universe has a different and unique personality. No one, even twins, absolute. Have you ever noticed that? You expect the twin, identical twin, to have the same personality. They may have the same voice. And eventually, there's a differentiation in personality. And you go, oh, I can tell. I know who I'm talking with. Mm-hmm. You know, because I have friends who were identical twins, and I knew who I was talking with, except if they wanted to fool you on purpose, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, but if they, you were really serious about that, you could tell them apart just by what they like to do and things, and even just being around them, not necessarily having any conversation, you just knew it was, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not totally identical.
Not totally identical. Personality-wise, is the only way many times I could tell them apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Dorians were the same way. They looked like exactly alike.
But there were a lot of them.
Oh, there were a lot of them, yeah. It was so strange. Here comes a Dorian, and I said, you know, he comes around, and I see him head on. Well, and they're riding the discs. Okay, so they're not walking, they're standing. Mm-hmm. But they're all lined up one behind the other, right? Because they're in single file, I guess, on the same track. Mm-hmm. And I only see one in the beginning, but then there is a turn, you know, that's made in front of me. And there goes, when he turns, there's the other guy right behind him. He looks exactly like the one there in front of him. I says, oh, it's twins. Oh, the next one turn is, oh, triplets. Mm-hmm. And the next or third, you know, oh no. And it kept going on. I said, this is not right. It's like 8, 9, 10, 11, you know.
Where a lot of,
what is going on? They're all exactly alike. Until the last guy came on. It was a little kid, you know. It's like maybe a little, it would be equivalent to a, you know, kindergartner, 5 years old or something. Small guy. He says, hi, we're Dorians. You know, he's the only guy that spoke to me. Everybody was kind of stone-faced, not saying much. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm going to grow up and be just like them. And he zipped away. I told him, oh, you're being left behind. Oh, then he zipped away like he was on a different track. He was freely, he was off the track. And he just zipped right around and made a big S turn and zoomed up and caught up with the group. But that was funny, you know. Later I was able to sit down with the Dorians. There were three of them, I believe. That's where I asked them, you know, I was addressing them as girls, you know, females, because they seemed to be had like a bob haircut, you know, Prince Valiant haircut. And they said, we're not girls. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. I thought I insulted them. And they said, oh, because they were kind of, you know, very, very feminine features, but no breast, flat-chested, no hips, just kind of straight and, you know, skinny girls, you might call them. Mm-hmm. But you know, they weren't. I said, oh, I'm sorry if you guys. I said, well, we're not that either. And then I got, oh. And in my mind, I said, oh, you guys are, what is the term for that? When you're both. Anyway, this is not, we're not that either. In other words, they weren't sex creatures. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And I guess they came about because of cloning or some way of building them exactly alike. But their personalities were very different, even the way they spoke, when he finally began to speak to me and, you know, in that conversation. Because it wasn't the same one answering the question. So we're not that either. And the other guy would say something like, but we're not, nope, we're not that either.
So all of them were having a conversation with you. They were the same conversation.
Same conversation, me trying to guess what they were, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, first one was, oh, I didn't mean to, you know, insult you, here I go ahead, trying to be politically correct. But they didn't care, you know, they just corrected me. But this is all part of the development necessary to understand our position. So if you only want to know about that, there are other aliens out there, there are plenty, but what are they on? And they fully understood. In fact, they really realized that they are having the same destiny, not the, the same offer for higher destiny. In other words, they needed to complete the course. Mm-hmm. And the course that we're living is able to transcend much of what could take maybe hundreds or thousands of years to obtain in terms of just theoretical. We actually attain them experientially. And experiential means to live life. And this goes back to Christ saying, I've come to give you life and life in abundance, to give you grand experience for an enriched and well-built soul. So concern yourself not so much with the things about you, these things about you concerning physical need and food and shelter, clothing, basic things. These things will be provided. It just automatically will be provided through the intelligence of yourself. And we gain in understanding. So through, you might say, the receptivity of our brain. One of the things I was wondering about, you know, I thought about our brain, I thought about thought, and they kind of gave me the impression, or the understanding actually, that our brain was really a receiver more than a, you know, processor of information, and because of that, a thought machine. Mm-hmm. We receive mind information. And you talk about Tesla, he was troubled with a lot of information that he had to push out of himself. Otherwise, he would go crazy with so much knowledge. He had to focus. This is the pressure of, you might say, the spiritual pressure of some of the aspects of the creative circuit, the Holy Spirit circuit. The Holy Spirit circuit is indeed very, very important in terms of understanding, but most of all in being able to truly construct a, you might say, a well-built soul in terms of living life. So this is what the difference is, so when it comes down to that.
So in building our eternal soul, just understanding how we got here and where we are.
Yeah.
That helps.
It helps, but it's not necessary.
One
of the things that I found interesting with watching, I'm watching the presidential race now.
Yeah.
Looking at the different players, you know. And one of the interesting characters is the non-political one, Donald Trump. He's not a politician.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he said something, he speaks from the heart, which is the center of the spiritual realm. And he processes it through the brain. He says, he talks about, I have a good brain. I speak from the heart and I have a good brain. And interestingly, if you put that in the celestial background, the celestial description, the heart, the root of the seat of the soul, you might call it, and the spiritual plane of truth, interaction between yourself or consciousness and the divine fragment, is where you speak from. And you cannot speak lies unless you're trained to speak lies. And there's politicians are and actors are well able to overcome the truth mechanism in built into every one of us.
Well, that's because they're speaking off a teleprompter.
That could very well be one of the devices used.
Hillary and Obama, they're just totally on those teleprompters.
That means they're not themselves.
No, who you're listening to is whoever wrote it, and who wrote it, and who are these people? They're just puppets and.
Yeah, for a mysterious Donald, controller.
Right, Donald does speak with no teleprompter. Alex Jones has no teleprompter.
Well, Alex is interesting because his person is real coarse. Alex Jones is very coarse.
When his son was on doing something about fluoride or speaking about fluoride, and after he was done, Alex goes, that's my son, no teleprompter free. Which it's just type in Obama's teleprompter broke and listen how it just sounds like he's a total different person.
Yes. So he's trying to, you know, act presidential when his teleprompter is broken, but when he's not, then he sounds very presidential. But just that ideal of a person that speaks presidential is one of the roots that Lucifer used to deceive high angels. Now, these high angels, many of them didn't have the advantage that we have.
And they fell for it.
They fell for it, exactly. But what we have is what Dana gave me the insight to, God is already in you. There is God. He's in you already. What? I kind of like, he's telling me, I'm searching for God, he's already inside of me. and he said, yes, but you must approach him. You know, you must make, and there's, then he, of course, was drawing seven circles and then telling me about him. So we approach, and, you know, when we develop and we make those circles, we get into a different arrangement and relationship. We begin to get higher intelligences. Our brain processes information differently. And when you look at the mortal core of destiny, there are different people for different jobs. Mm-hmm. And these jobs have to do with overall destiny of the human race, you might call it, or our planetary paradigm. And apparently right now, I was being given insight that our paradigm needs to shift. So a paradigm shift was already in the works, and sometimes they use people from the beginning and they drive them to a purpose. I'm going to use David and Goliath. You ever heard of David and Goliath?
Yes.
David was a shepherd boy. He tended the flocks, but he also lived with the flocks. Okay, that's the shepherd. That's what a shepherd does. He stays and watches the sheep. And he had a lot of time and spent a lot of nights contemplating. So he got close to the divine voice. Now, the divine voice wasn't fully, you might call it, enacted by the Holy Spirit, because it had not yet received the full measure of distribution throughout the human race. But he had the divine voice with him. He had the divine fractal. He had a little bit of God. And he worked with it. But he also perfected material skills. And this was to defend his flock. Mm-hmm. And the flock of sheep was attacked by wolves and a lion, and it's greater than a bear or something. But the greatest weapon he had was just a slingshot. But he could take on a lion at distance with that slingshot. But you can imagine how many times he, and how many stones he flung with that slingshot to make sure he could protect his sheep.
You can't hit anything with a slingshot.
Unless you practice.
Oh, well, you practice and it's really hard.
Yeah, and he practiced to a point where he could hit it over and over and over again.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. There's something called 10,000 hours. Mm-hmm. And if you practice something for 10,000 hours, mm-hmm. that generally is equivalent to an apprenticeship. You know, an apprentice, whatever. 10,000 hours rocks up to so many years, okay? Mm-hmm. And of time, generally an apprenticeship. And true apprenticeship was not something you went 2 years of school and just finished up and you got up, now you got some program. No, you go through schooling and you go through the time, and it builds up over, you know, 4 or 5 year period. Musicians are the same way. Any art is the same way. But once you receive that 10,000 hours, you end up being very good at it. You know, I don't think anyone could practice for 10,000 hours and not be good at something.
Mm-hmm.
You practice that one thing. And if you practice slingshots for 10,000 hours, you'll be able to put it where, put a stone exactly where you want it. I remember my cousin had a regular slingshot with using rubber band, you know, mm-hmm. action surgical tubi. And he used marbles as his ammunition. And I couldn't even see the bird 100 feet in the trees. I couldn't see it. He said, "Look up there, you see this there, I'm gonna get it." And you know, he took that slingshot and he shot the bird and he recovered the body, no head. In other words, he hit the bird in the head. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't even see it fall. I was amazed that he had such insight, but he had practiced 10,000 hours. He was older, much older than me. He's about 10 years older than I was. So I looked up to him, and my cousin is a, you know, wow, he's a superhero. And I got my slingshot and I couldn't even shoot the target. And pretty soon, you know, I kept, yes, teach you to practice, and get better and better. And then I realized, oh yeah, you get better after a while. You just feel your target. The people in something called Kyudo archery in Japan, they can feel their target. They don't even have to see it. And they can shoot right through, you know, what we call soji doors, the paper doors in Japan, and go right through a house and then hit the target on the other side of the house. How they did that was feeling the target. It's almost extrasensory. In fact, it is extrasensory. But it's an amazing thing that happens. So here's David. He acquired this 10,000-hour skill. And in there was a king, King Saul, who said, yeah, you know, we got to battle these guys. Got a champion here. And it's, who's this uncircumcised Philistine that dares, you know, that dares mock and attack or mock the armies of the living God? They considered themselves the armies of the living God. And what happened was Saul said, hey, take my armor. But Saul was big. He was, you know, he stood head and shoulder above everybody else. You can imagine David putting his helmet on and the thing go down to his nose. Can't even see. No, that doesn't work. Put his shield on. Yeah, the shield gets too big, falls down. Put his breastplate on and the thing down to his knees. Hey, everything was wrong. So he threw it all away. He says, no, I don't need any other stuff. I just need my slingshot. So this is something called considering preparation for a one-time affair. So here is an individual prepared over hours and hours as a, you know, shepherd boy. all to enact one level of change, which is to defeat this giant, Goliath, and to use only a weapon that he was familiar with. Mm-hmm. And then finally, when Goliath was knocked out, pretty close to, pretty much knocked out, he takes his sword and chops his head off. But that is the degree in which he used a sword, because a slingshot cannot chop a head off. But it also shows that, you know, he was able to lift and carry Goliath's sword. But the swords of those days were bronze. And bronze swords were short. They wouldn't be considered a sword. It would be, a bronze sword would be about the length, a little bit past your, if you were to grab it, it would be about the length of your forearm. Mm-hmm. So it was about the length of Goliath's forearm. So he could still wield it. It's a short, you know, they were never made really long, because they would break. So anyway, that's a little bit of how, you know, a former, you might call him a mortal, an individual of the mortal core of destiny of long ago, was prepared for a one-time affair. Okay, so with Donald Trump, this is interesting, because he's talking about using his brain as a good brain. He doesn't need counselors. Where was he getting all this counsel to get rich from? Even his father counseled him against moving in the direction that he was. And nobody else gave him any idea that such a thing was possible. And he came up with that someplace, in terms of, you know, creating this Trump thing. For what purpose? Well, maybe to defeat the powers that be, that have created a paradigm of deceit and control and puppeteering, you know, which is, even Nancy Leader calls them the puppeteers or something like that. And, you know, she realizes that. But the system needs to go through change. There's some terrible things that are in the works that may not be easily remedied, and that would be in terms of even life itself, the genetic manipulation of life to a point of, you know, poisoning the world with improper genetics. I'm wondering why or how come the Dorians of their own planet ended up as clone people. Why, if they may have had a former way where they were sexual creatures, did they end up as, you might call them, non-sexual creatures, only clone, because of ultimate control of life, sentient life? I'm not sure. But it was for me to meet them and then to, you know, to realize that all people, and I call them, whether they were aliens or whatever, they had personality. They were people of personality. And this is an important factor, because that is what we are developing truly, ultimately a divine personality, one unique in nature.
So are you saying the Dorians all had different personalities?
Yeah, they had. Mm-hmm. Definite. I could tell them apart. Mm-hmm. Once this started to, you know, I began to work with them, they had different personalities.
Mm-hmm. Never spoken with a Dorian myself.
Yeah.
So I knew a woman named Dorian, mm-hmm. and Riley drew those symbols, and her symbol, well, Riley had
themes of threes and sevens. Three of these, seven of those. Mm-hmm. And with all the symbols he ever did, I only saw one symbol with 21 spheres. Mm-hmm. And that's the one he gave to Dorian.
Mm.
21 spheres. I thought, that's the same threes and sevens. God, say just...
Yeah, three times seven.
Yeah, three times seven. But with all those symbols, that was the only one I ever saw that way.
Mm-hmm. And you know the significance of threes and sevens.
Well, yeah, this... Well, right now I can't think of it, but threes and sevens. I forget what used to be at the, on the top of my brain about it, but go ahead. I'll think of it, maybe.
Well, first, you know, the base of the first source and center, you might say central universe, and dwelling in that central paradise is the Trinity. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, commonly called that, but actually functioning prior to the universe being created, the grand universe, not necessarily our local universe. So, definitely before the local universe.
Well,
and
one thing I thought of is the Earth was the third planet from the Sun. Mm-hmm. Or if you're coming in from the universe, we're the seventh planet in.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, maybe that has something to do with it.
Well, yeah, the interaction between the seven distinct natures are interactions between the seven individual likenesses. Seven, you have the Father, Son, Spirit, each one of them is three. All of them together form the Trinity, making the fourth nature. And yet each one can interact with the Father, can be with the Son. It's the fifth nature. And the Father can be with the Spirit, and that would be the sixth nature. And the Son can be with the Spirit, and that would be the seventh nature. So these are why threes and sevens work together in terms of interacting with our destiny. And we interact with individually the Father divinely implanted in us in terms of the Father fractal, the thought adjuster, but also interchanging with the personality circuit of the Son. Without the personality circuit of the Son, we may not be able to interface on a easy plane of understanding with divinity. But because we have the Son, Creator Son, Jesus Christ, for us in our local system right here on Urantia, that is made easy and, of course, implemented by communion or communication with, through all with the instiller, the implementer, the Holy Spirit, which also gives communication, a reflectivity circuit between all and others, ourselves and others. So that's a...
Reflecting, so, and I'm sorry, what do you mean by reflecting, reflecting circuit?
Well, a reflectivity level of interface is one in which is not direct.
Okay.
When we think of non-direct, we think of going through a reflectivity circuit, which would be something like a telephone line or the very, you know, digital communique we are. We're breaking down acoustics into some components which can be digitized. It's called encoding, and then rebuilding, which is decoding. And the whole process is called, you know, goes through detailed process, first of all, in order to do that. In a similar sense, We don't have a direct communication between ourselves and others of celestial origin. Even with you right now, you might call our communication a reflectivity circuit versus being in your space with me at the same time. Mm-hmm. In other words, I'm your house or you're in my house. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at each other and talking. This is reflectivity. So the reflectivity circuit couldn't be defined easily in the Yiransha book because it is spiritual in nature. And because it is, it couldn't be, say, direct communication. You mean you've been talking to God or you've been talking to angels? Now, how did that happen? You know, mm-hmm. I didn't hear them. How did you hear them? You know? Well, yeah. Yeah. So, So it is reflectivity in terms of a type of communication that requires some adaption, adaptivity, you might call it, or entanglement in when it's, which was what happened to Nancy Leader and myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's the communicator. I'm the navigator. Navigator is also a communicator, but a communicator is not a navigator. So that's what I was told. So I have the communication ability, but also the navigation. The navigator in terms of spiritual destiny. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we want, you know, to get people off of getting rich for this life. Okay? Mm-hmm. You know, I want to talk to an angel. I want to, you know, win the lotto, you know. Give me the numbers or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what a lottery is. We don't have those, but, you know, people can win money, you know. Stuff. Yeah. But stuff like that or gamble. Recently, you know, on this cruise ship, they have like a casino. Mm-hmm. So there was a roulette table. So this is the first time I ever saw a roulette table working. So, interestingly enough, I was watching, looking at these people and around the roulette table, very interested, and I was So I just said, I'm going to look at it. I want to watch a person win. I want to watch a person win. So, this is the ball going around and around. So, I'm walking up there, I see the ball going around and around. It goes clinkity, clink, 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 and it falls into this place, right? The number or whatever. And the person, I guess, who's the boss of the table, is she. She does all the things. She's pulling things away, and then she pushes some things, changes the chips, and she pushes it to that person. Person grabs that, walks off. In other words, I saw a person win, but just because I wanted to see a person win. Lucky for her. In other words, our celestial friends can make these things happen. Just for my enrichment, you might call it, mm-hmm. in terms of understanding. See, the idea of they can actually make you rich. And this is where I look at Donald Trump as being driven to become absolutely, fully rich and then be willing to turn his back on it. And that's a special because most people, I think anyone reaching that level are stuck in the rut of having wealth. And they only protect the wealth. Even Jesus said, that's why rich men will hardly make it into the kingdom of heaven because they spend so much time building their physical riches and they forget about the divine development of their soul. Mm. You know, and this is where another characteristic about a person who has developed the relationship, the divine relationship between thought adjuster and your own consciousness, is there's none of this political stuff because you cannot lie. You cannot fool God. You cannot fool the thought adjuster. He knows, you know, your heart, the depth of it. In fact, he implants truth in you that you might discover it. And this is where the discovery part comes about as a truly enriching point in which now divinity has one more spoke in the wheel to you, one more connection. You might think of it as this. You might see, you ever see a bicycle with the tire and the spokes?
Sure.
And around the central hub. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to look at that and say, look how flimsy that, you know, when I was a little kid.
The spokes, you know, are?
Yeah, spokes. There's this, mm-hmm. You know, and then I remember my first bicycle was made up of that, and I had to polish the spokes because they got rusty over here because of the salt air. Mm-hmm. And my dad was re-spoking some wheels, and I get the spoke, and I look, and this thing holds up the whole wheel. You know, but a whole, there, you know, one by one, turning around, you know, each one of them doing their job one at a time.
And you can sit on it. Sit on the bicycle.
And it doesn't bend. But you sit on one spoke, you bend it, you
yes,
know.
Yes, that's right.
But what happened was, so this understanding just, you know, if you were to look at yourself, the divine, and you put yourself as the central hub. That's you in the middle. And all about you is the divine voice. And he's making contact with you in so many areas of your life. And each one is building a spoke. Now, pretty soon, you're a complete wheel. Now, as a fully mature, complete soul, you can navigate the universe because you have in place all the necessary equipment. This is where building, soul building is living. I've come to give you life and life abundantly. So you have enough spokes in the, you know, so you can be a fully functional wheel, bicycle wheel, you know, made up of flimsy stuff. If you think it's spiritual, wow, that's pretty intangible. Yet, in terms of Marantia, it is far more powerful than our physical self. So it endures past ages. And actually can dwell where there is no time and no space. Hmm. Yeah, this is where sometimes you look at the order of things and think that everything that dwells within our domain must function with time and space. Mm-hmm. But those who function on a spiritual level in tangent or in tangent with or entangled with the divine are now not limited to time and space. And this is where precognition comes about. This is where we can actually interact and realize that the destinies that may have been written about are not locked in our timeline. And our timeline is personal. Purely personal, and we develop truly unique personalities, enriched with a full life. So that's where, you know, we want to go. We want to build that full life. And the fabricator of it is both ourselves, and you might call it God Himself implanted in us. That's why being sent or being sent back to live life was so important, and why when a person needs to has the, you know, when, you know, these people who have gone near death have actually made a transition, were actually dead and had the chance to relive or to enrich, was because their soul wasn't complete enough. They needed to complete more work to complete the character. In other words, not enough spokes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Donald Trump's soul, how well do you think his soul has been developed?
It's been developed to gain the necessary tools, which was absolute riches, which is something that is not easily done. In fact, I don't believe he even knew that he was heading that way, except that he needed to follow the pressure that was on him. That pressure was to get rich. And it was something that only God can do, really. I mean, to equip somebody so that they can be released of it. You know what I mean? This is some dangerous place for a soul to be, you know, because they may not get out of it very well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, apparently he is at a point which he can walk away from you know, the entanglement with it. Mm-hmm. There are so many people out there absolutely rich. They're stuck in it. They're like locked into it. You know, a famous name like George Soros, very, very, very wealthy. You know, they're stuck into it. They absolutely can't get out of it.
Seems like Donald Trump's pretty flexible.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's also kind of honest, you know. And sometimes he says things that are a little bit too honest.
Well, when you give someone a whole hour to talk, it usually comes out.
Yeah, eventually it comes out, yeah. You know, and it can be misconstrued, or actually people are afraid of him and they want to dethrone him. And that's something that, but I'm looking at it as, you know, the necessity right now for the paradigm shift to happen.
Yes.
Otherwise, the planet will go off in a tangent. Now, this is something that that tangent will, one of the things, okay, let me put it to you this way. The book of Revelation says that the souls of men, you know, were exchanged. The souls of men become property. What is that mean? The soul is a relationship between one's consciousness and the consciousness of God through the brain circuit. You know, the brain itself being, you know, you might call it an instrument to develop this eternal soul. And if you lock a person into a type of debt slavery, you pretty much cripple that individual's development, because now they're stuck. They're stuck in terms of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, they want to make a, you know, one of the things they said about, you remember the women's rights movement, you know?
Yeah.
I remember my mom didn't work. She is a nurse. She worked as a nurse. But as soon as we were born, she took care of us until we were like high school, you know? Mm-hmm. She could have left for work and done something else. Let us, you know, later. And there have been a couple of times where she did, but most of the time she was, you know, 90% of the time she was taking care of us. But what had happened was there was the big guys, the bankers and all, you know, finding the guys who wanted a new paradigm of enslavement said, hey, we got a whole another half of the household, which is the woman. We've got a So they actually instilled and tried to produce this women's movement, and really to get another part of the workforce going. That was part of even the war effort. In fact, there was something concerning the original riveter. What was her name, the riveter?
Nancy
the riveter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she actually is alive, you know, one of the original. And that did, in 1940-something, the war effort, work in a man's field. And that never left. And did it free the people to develop their souls more fully? Maybe, maybe not, you know. But it's come to a point where it may not be that way. A person's education and consciousness can be absolutely enslaved by, you know, entanglement with a financial system that's got them to college. And college is a huge debt system. And its payoff is right now not guaranteed. So he may be getting into a huge debt for no good reason, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there. Which it'll be obsolete whenever they get out.
Yeah.
Before they start.
Yeah, and that's the souls of men being exchanged. So that is found in the book of Revelation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this paradigm must shift because the planetary purpose is, you know, gone wrong. In other words, it's the idea of wickedness and that moves life off of its divine purpose of development. Anyway, That's a little bit of where the question led me to, not necessarily to bring Sharun into the conversation, but he's always there.
Yeah, we know he's there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we could close and record next week. And I do like hearing you talk about Donald Trump. And,
try to look at him as an example of what, you know, we should look at, honestly. Not as a, you know, you might say a developed human. He doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke. He sleeps 3 or 4 hours a night, which are actually high characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to, I don't live by that. I don't smoke, but I still, you know, I enjoy some whiskey now and then. But the thing about that is that he has a pure mind, a mind that is fully cognizant of divine leadership and thought. That's why he doesn't use counsels. In fact, people want to counsel him and he doesn't, he's got a free brain,
mm-hmm.
but he receives wisdom that isn't his, you know. That's how he became so rich. And he went on a course that is so different, and he talks about common sense, which is, common sense is really knowledge that is gifted through, you might call it, the agitated mind spirits. You know, this is what the Irancha book has put it together. So look up agitated mind spirits if you want to, and see the different gateways in which knowledge and divine correlation can be brought into a person's life. Yeah. But personality is personality. It's all yours. All unique.
Interesting. Well, adjutant mind spirits, that's in the Irancha book?
Yeah, adjutant.
We just talked about that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy brought that up.
Yeah. So you can see it functioning in some very famous guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and see it. Wow, because he does a lot of talking, you know, and doesn't need to. It's like, wow. Simplify. You know, one of the things about getting a problem, you ever remember mathematical problems?
Sure.
Your first thing you had to do was simplify, right?
Yeah, you had to understand what was going on first.
Yeah, and what was the question? What was mm-hmm. the, and what's necessary? And you try to simplify. So then you divide it sometimes into workable pieces, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of simplify, finally come up with an answer. That's just, you think that is just mind working by itself in terms of logic. But in terms of getting inspiration, it doesn't work that way. It comes out of thin air sometimes. And
creativity.
That's where, serendipity?
Creativity.
Creativity, yes. Mm-hmm. It's just not there. Unless you tune in to the divine.
All of a sudden, there's the answer you're looking for.
Yeah, where did that come from? It came from your relationship. Another spoke was put in place. So, mm-hmm. Anyway, that's a little bit of the message here.
All right, well.
Get busy and, you know, there's so many things God can fill in, life experiences. Once you get in the proper pieces. And, you know, if you had the proper way to spoke a wheel, was making sure before you tighten them down that they're all in the right place. Yeah.
Yep, yeah. And they all get equal tension.
Right, and you don't have one build it up all on one side because it won't work. It's got to be. So there's minimal spokes and there's maximum spokes. There's somewhat maximum amount of you, but you can't actually spoke a wheel for minimum. And it looks sort of frail, and mm-hmm. they're kind of, yeah, but it's interesting how they work.
Yeah, well, they're trying their hardest to not get Donald Trump to get all those delegates, and if they, and if he, even if he did, they can they change the rules, and
yeah,
it's
this is the paradigm that has to change
because
it's all it's all orchestrated outside the realm of destiny, our own, you know, being able to carve our own destiny through, you know, the grand experiment. The United States was a grand experiment. And another example of someone like Donald Trump is George Washington.
Oh, yeah.
George Washington was filthy rich, absolutely rich, you know. And he also was divinely inspired.
He didn't have a car.
Yeah, and even there's stories about George Washington and alien intervention and, you know, the stories about him. And that's true, that he had divine help, because it was all part of creating the grand experiment in terms of the United States to help the world overcome Lucifer's deception and control.
Mm. Well, I'd like to hear more about that next week. I don't know too much about George Washington associated with the Celestials.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. I think Ted made mention about that once. Okay. Until next time.
Next time. Okay. Aloha, Michael.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Bye.